November 12, 1976, Inverness, Scotland. 36-year-old Renee McRae and her 3-year-old son Andrew leave on a weekend trip, supposedly to visit Renee's sister. Later that night, their flaming vehicle is discovered at an isolated lay-by next to the A9, but Renee and Andrew have disappeared. It turns out that Renee was actually planning to visit her secret lover, who also happens to be Andrew's biological father. Even though this revelation creates a lot of suspicion, Renee and Andrew are never found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today our podcast is going international again, as we will be featuring our very first mystery from the United Kingdom, the disappearance of Renee and Andrew McRae, which took place in Scotland in 1976. This one is actually a request from a Scottish listener named Michelle, so thanks for this great suggestion, Michelle. Up until this point, the only case we've covered from outside North America has been the Australian disappearance of Eloise Warlidge, so I think it's about time we examined another mystery from overseas. And besides, we have just passed the 40th anniversary of this particular disappearance, so I think the timing is perfect. I don't know how well known this case is in North America, but it's considered to be one of the most infamous unsolved mysteries in the history of Scotland. I myself did not have a lot of knowledge of this case before it was requested, but when I started researching it, I quickly found myself trapped inside the rabbit hole, and hopefully you will too. But before we get started, let's take a brief moment to get some business out of the way. The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes like this one and 15 to 20 minute mini-sodes about smaller scale cold cases which don't have as much material. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new mini-sode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it. If you give us a rating or a review at any of these sites, you're opening the door for us to get more exposure and garner us new listeners. The Trail Went Cold has its own PayPal account and a donate button on the website for anyone who's feeling generous. If there's anyone out there who feels like making a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we will be happy to give any of our wonderful donors a shout-out on a future episode. So with all that out of the way, let us now take the trip to Scotland to explore the unsolved disappearances of Renee and Andrew McRae. Our story begins in Inverness, Scotland in 1976. Our central figure is 36-year-old Christina McRae, who goes by the name Renee. Renee's husband is Gordon McRae, who, along with his brother, runs the family business, a million-dollar building firm called Hugh McRae & Company. The couple have 2 sons, 9-year-old Gordon Jr. and 3-year-old Andrew. However, at this point, the McRae's marriage has fallen apart, and they have been separated for over a year. On Friday, November 12th, Renee tells everyone that she is planning a weekend trip to visit her sister in Kilmarnock. For some reason, Renee plans to bring Andrew with her, but not Gordon Jr., who will be spending the weekend with his father. At around 5 p.m., Renee briefly stopped by Gordon's company headquarters, but he did not actually visit or interact with her husband. Afterward, she and Andrew ventured out onto the A9, the longest road in Scotland, in Renee's BMW, but neither of them would be seen alive again. At approximately 9:55 p.m., the BMW was discovered by a bus driver who pulled into an isolated lay-by off the side of the A9. The vehicle was in flames, so the police were instantly notified. They soon arrived to put out the fire, but Renee and Andrew were nowhere in sight. The lay-by was located 12 miles south of Inverness and was surrounded by a vast moorland. It was hard to nail down an exact time frame for how long the BMW had been there. Even though it was discovered at 9:55, a railroad engineer would later tell authorities that he saw the burning vehicle at around 8:50 when his train passed through the area. The lay-by was actually hidden from the A9 by an embankment, so the BMW very well could have been in flames for over an hour without any passing motorists spotting it. It was not until the bus driver saw a flicker of flames behind the embankment that he decided to check things out. Even though the last official sighting of Renee took place at 5 o'clock, there were actually sightings of the BMW parked in another lay-by between 7 and 8 o'clock. This lay-by was located next to the Mealmore Hotel, located 7 miles south of Inverness. Even though Renee had packed an overnight bag and Andrew's pushchair into the trunk before they left, they were also missing. The only piece of evidence to be found inside the BMW's charred remains was a blood-stained rug, and testing would later determine that the blood type matched Renee. Subsequent eyewitness accounts would soon cause police to fear the worst. That night, motorists on the A9 would report seeing a man dragging what appeared to be a dead sheep. He was seen in the vicinity of the lay-by and heading in the direction of nearby Dalmagary Quarry. Well, at the time she disappeared, Renee was wearing a sheepskin coat, so there was a very good possibility they saw someone dragging her body. A massive search would eventually be conducted of the area, but no trace of Renee or Andrew could be found. Anyway, when Gordon McRae was notified about the flaming BMW, he phoned Renee's sister to see if she had possibly made alternate arrangements to come visit her. Maybe Renee had decided to take the train instead and parked the car somewhere when it was subsequently stolen and burned by vandals. Well, the case took a very surprising turn when Renee's sister denied that she was coming to see her that weekend at all. So where exactly was Renee going? Police soon got an answer when they spoke to Renee's best friend, Valerie Steventon, who claimed that Renee was actually planning to travel to Perth to spend the weekend with her secret lover, Bill McDowell. McDowell was a married man with two daughters of his own, and he also happened to work as an accountant at Gordon McRae's building firm. Apparently, Renee and Bill had been carrying on a lengthy affair for over 4 years. Even though the McRae's were currently separated, the affair was not the main reason the marriage had fallen apart, as Gordon did not even know about it. He suspected Renee was having an affair, but did not know who it was with. Valerie Steventon was literally the only person Renee ever told about it. According to Valerie, Renee told her that Bill had been offered a new job in Shetland and found a new house there. Bill was planning to leave his family, so he and Renee could move to Shetland together. In fact, this was supposed to take place the weekend after the disappearances. When Renee's house was searched, most of her personal belongings were packed into boxes, which seemed to support the idea that she was planning to move somewhere very soon. Well, investigators finally questioned Bill, and he admitted to the affair with Renee, but denied any involvement in her disappearance. But he also dropped a major bombshell. He was actually Andrew's biological father. So this provided a possible explanation for why Renee decided to bring Andrew on her weekend trip while Gordon Jr. stayed at home. Bill claimed that he had planned to spend the weekend in Perth with Renee, but cancelled at the last minute and never saw her at all on November 12th. He apparently had grown tired of the affair, but still stayed with Renee longer than he intended because he was afraid she might tell everyone. There also turned out to be no truth at all to the claims that Bill had received a new job in Shetland and was planning to move there. Bill also mentioned that he and Renee had a secret coded system for passing messages where they would call each other up and just let the phone ring a certain amount of times to signal it was them. He said that on two separate occasions after Renee went missing, his phone rang in that exact fashion, which gave him the impression that Renee was still alive somewhere and sending him coded messages. In Bill's defense, his wife Rosemary did provide him with an alibi for the night of the disappearances. 1 week later, Bill showed up at police headquarters to make a voluntary statement, and he apparently looked quite upset at the time. However, Rosemary spotted his car parked outside and literally walked into the building and dragged Bill away before he could say anything. In the past 40 years, McDowell has apparently only been interviewed once by the police. He also refused to give interviews to the media and went nearly 3 decades before breaking his silence. In spite of the revelation that her husband was carrying on a years-long affair with another woman and had fathered an illegitimate child, Rosemary still decided to stay with Bill, and the McDowell family soon moved to London. And as far as I know, Bill and Rosemary have remained together ever since. Oh, and I guess it goes without saying that Gordon McRae immediately fired Bill from his company. Finding out that one of your employees is your son's real father probably isn't going to go over very well. As you can imagine, this case became quite a sensation in Scotland, and is probably the most famous missing persons case in their history. Of course, the most interesting lead was the eyewitness sightings of the man who may have been dragging Reenie's body in the direction of Dalmagerry Quarry. On that same night, there were also alleged sightings of a man with a pushchair near the quarry, and as you'll recall, Andrew's pushchair had gone missing from the trunk of the BMW. There also happened to be another quarry 6 miles away from the area called Lenick Quarry, which was linked underwater to Dalmagerry Quarry. Witnesses reported separate but similar sightings of an estate car that night on back roads which were in close proximity to both quarries, and these seemed like ideal locations to dispose of two bodies. On YouTube, you can watch a Scottish TV special about this case titled The A9 Mystery, which aired on the one-year anniversary in 1977. They show footage of a search being performed at Lenick Quarry, where a submersible underwater camera picked up something which at first glance looked like an outline of a human face inside a bag. However, when the bag was recovered from the water, it contained nothing more than garden rubbish. The water was very cluttered with debris and incredibly difficult to search. After finding no trace of the McRaes, the search of the quarry was called off, though some would say this decision was made prematurely. But that's nothing compared to this story about the excavation which was performed at Dalmagerry Quarry. Approximately 8 months after the disappearances, a detective sergeant named John Cathcart was heading the excavation, which involved using a rented bulldozer, an important detail which I'll get back to in a second. On this particular day, Cathcart and the bulldozer's operator detected a smell of rotting flesh at one particular spot, so they started digging away with hand tools. They didn't find anything, but Cathcart figured they would use the bulldozer to dig deeper when they returned to the site the following day. Well, guess what? When Cathcart reported his findings to his superior, that's when he was told the excavation had been cancelled. You see, that bulldozer was a rental, and apparently this police department just did not have the funds to keep it out for one extra day. So in spite of a potentially huge lead which might have led to the recovery of the victims' bodies, the bulldozer was returned to the contractors, and that was the end of that. But to be fair, the police did eventually return to the quarry and performed a full excavation in 2004. Yes, just over 26 years after the McRaes went missing, their story was featured in the debut episode of a new Scottish TV series called Unsolved, and it rejuvenated interest in the case. Detective Sergeant Cathcart was interviewed in this segment, and this is where he shared his experience of having the excavation called off after he detected the smell of rotting flesh. So a decision was made to do a cold case review, and this time, £122,000 were spent to finally perform a full-fledged excavation of Dalmagerry Quarry. This involved excavating 20,000 tons of earth and removing 2,000 trees, but unfortunately, there was no trace of the McRaes, and nothing of substance was found. But since 3 decades had passed, this didn't necessarily mean that Renee or Andrew's bodies were never in the quarry. The chief constable on the case actually stated that new information had come out to make him believe that the bodies had been in Dalmagerry Quarry at one point, but he wouldn't elaborate on this. To date, no more excavations or searches have ever been performed at Lenick Quarry, as the water has become a lot more cluttered, and such an operation might be too costly. Interestingly enough, it was around this time that an Inverness newspaper received an anonymous letter which stated that 5 people, including a police officer, had been involved in a conspiracy to murder Reenie McRae, but that Andrew was actually still alive and had been sent to live abroad somewhere. The police pretty much wrote this letter off as a hoax, and as far as I know, the lead never went anywhere. However, the renewed interest in the case actually compelled Bill McDowell to break his silence and do his first interview with the media, but he didn't really say anything of note. He admitted to the affair and to being Andrew's biological father, but he continued to maintain his innocence and insist he had nothing to do with the disappearances. Well, the investigation continued on, and in October of 2006, the police submitted a report to the Crown Office in which they named a prime suspect, but the Crown Office ultimately determined that there was just not enough evidence to take the suspect to court. So while the police have never stopped their investigation into the disappearances of Reaney and Andrew McRae, they have uncovered no major leads within the past decade. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But there is one amateur sleuth out there who has taken a special interest in this case and really wants to solve it. He is an elderly farmer from the area named Brian McGregor, who watched the Unsolved TV episode in 2004 and became quite troubled by this story. After the police completed their excavation of Dalmagerry Quarry, McGregor became convinced that they didn't do a thorough enough job, and he believed that the bodies of Reaney and Andrew McRae could have been buried under an area of land near the quarry, rather than the quarry itself. McGregor went so far as to contact the police and the owners of the quarry, offering to provide use of his own personal excavator to perform another dig, but he was denied permission to do this. However, McGregor soon changed his tune and decided that the bodies might actually be buried under a section of the A9. After running newspaper ads urging anyone to come forward with information, McGregor was contacted by two men who were working on a construction project on the A9 back in 1976. The morning after Reaney's BMW was discovered, these men noticed that some road foundations they were working on had been disturbed. It looked to them like someone had dumped fresh rubble over a portion which had been flat the last time they saw it. Well, McGregor personally commissioned and paid for a survey using ground-penetrating radar, and he claims that anomalies were detected under a specific spot on the A9, which he marked with a yellow circle for a photo in the newspaper. A metal detector also recorded a signal near this spot, and McGregor thinks it might have picked up Andrew's missing pushchair. But thus far, McGregor has been unable to convince anyone to perform a dig at this location, as police do not believe the bodies are buried there. It should be mentioned that Brian McGregor has quite a reputation in the area for being an outspoken eccentric, and you can see this is true if you visit his website, brianmcgregor.com. McGregor seems to imply that the police might be deliberately covering something up, and surprisingly, it seems that some of his suspicion is not directed at Bill McDowell, but Gordon McRae. McGregor got in touch with John Cathcart, who told him that after his superiors cancelled the excavation of Dalmagerry Quarry in 1977, he went to see Gordon McRae. According to Cathcart, Gordon offered the services of his own construction crew from his building firm to perform their own excavation. But for whatever reason, this plan never went through, and whenever Cathcart attempted to contact Gordon to follow up, he never got back to him. So now that we've named the potential suspects, I guess the brunt of my analysis will be theorizing about who the real perpetrator of this crime may be. Sadly, I think there's zero doubt that Reaney and Andrew were both murdered on the same night they disappeared, and there's no chance they're still alive today. It's just a matter of finding their bodies. So the big question is, who killed them? Could it have been Gordon McRae, Bill McDowell, or some unknown third party that we don't even know about? Well, the big complication here is that Gordon and Bill supposedly both have alibis for the night of the disappearances, although the details about them are very vague. All I've learned is that Gordon was supposedly with other people that night, and that Rosemary McDowell provided her husband with an alibi. As far as I know, it doesn't look like the police were able to poke any substantial holes in either of their alibis, but if neither of them are guilty, then who could the real perpetrator be? Could Reaney and Andrew have possibly crossed paths with some random psycho? Well, here's an interesting development. In 2011, an elderly man named George Urquhart came forward to tell authorities that he believed the killer was an acquaintance of Bill McDowell's. Apparently, this man was away from his home on the weekend the McRae's went missing, and when he returned, He said some suspicious remarks which made Urquhart believe he might be responsible. This suspect was questioned by police, and not only did he deny Urquhart's allegations, but he claimed he didn't even know Bill McDowell at all. Indeed, Urquhart does admit that he holds a personal grudge against the suspect, so a lot of people doubt he is telling the truth. This particular lead has never really gone anywhere, but it does open up an interesting possibility. If Gordon McRae and Bill McDowell both had airtight alibis and were unable to perform the murders themselves, could either of them have hired someone else to do it? I suppose I probably wouldn't take this idea as seriously if there weren't allegations of a police cover-up, but keep in mind that the main driving force behind this theory is Brian McGregor, an amateur sleuth who is known for having very eccentric viewpoints. I think a lot of these conspiracy ideas were fueled by John Cathcart and his claims that the police decided to end the excavation of the quarry after he detected the smell of rotting flesh. This story might very well be true, and if it is, it doesn't make the police look too good. But isn't it possible that they did this simply because they were major penny pinchers, not because they didn't want the bodies to be found? Because honestly, I really don't see the motive for a police cover-up here. I just don't know why the police would be so invested in sweeping the murder of a mother and her 3-year-old child under the rug. And I certainly don't believe that anonymous letter which claimed that 5 people, including a police officer, conspired to murder Reenie and sent Andrew to live somewhere under a new identity. Unless Reenie McRae had a history of crossing paths with law enforcement or trying to expose corruption or something, I just don't see what they would have to gain by covering up her death. The only possible explanation might be if Gordon McRae was paying them off for something, because he was a pretty wealthy and influential man in the area. Yet the only people who seem focused on pointing fingers at Gordon are Brian McGregor and John Cathcart, who claims that Gordon blew off the idea of using his own diggers to excavate the quarry. Is that story true? Possibly, though that seems to be the only suspicious allegation I've ever seen towards Gordon. It is true that Gordon would have had a motive to do this. Yes, his marriage to Reenie was pretty much over, and it sounds like he had come to terms with the fact that she had been having an affair, even though he wasn't sure who it was with. In spite of their issues, Gordon still seemed to speak pretty highly of his wife. Gordon claims he didn't find out he was not Andrew's biological father until after the disappearances, but if he somehow found out this beforehand, that might have been the kind of thing which could set him off and cause him to commit murder. But even if he was angry at Reenie, would Gordon be cold-blooded enough to kill a 3-year-old child as well? If he learned that Andrew was technically not his son, then I guess it's possible that he wouldn't want him anymore. But still, Gordon had spent 3 years believing Andrew was his son, and raising him as his own. It would take a pretty sociopathic person to suddenly decide that killing the child was the best option. It sounds like Gordon felt pretty betrayed when he discovered his own company accountant had been involved with Reenie, so maybe he thought that exposing the affair and directing all the suspicion towards Bill McDowell was a satisfying form of revenge. But there's also a possible financial motive here. Reenie was not employed, but in spite of their separation, Gordon was still financially supporting her and paying all of her expenses. Apparently, his company was also experiencing financial problems at the time of Reenie's disappearance, which could potentially be exacerbated if Gordon and Reenie went through a divorce. Maybe he just decided that continuing to pay Reenie's expenses was too much of a financial burden, so he decided to get rid of her. But still, would financial issues drive someone to murder a 3-year-old? It's worth mentioning that Gordon always seemed to be forthcoming when speaking with the police and the media, the same which could not be said about Bill McDowell. Of course, just because McDowell shied away from speaking with the police and the media doesn't automatically mean he's guilty. Even if he's an innocent man, it's his right to stay silent and keep out of the spotlight. But that doesn't change the fact that no one would have had more to gain from Reenie and Andrew's disappearances than Bill McDowell. If the revelations about the affair and being Andrew's father got out, not only could McDowell potentially lose his family, but he could lose his job as well, since he was screwing around with his boss's wife. The main reason that it's been hard to make a strong case against Bill is because of his wife Rosemary, who is the real wild card in this situation. She's the one who provided Bill with an alibi on the night of the disappearances, and literally dragged him out of the police station when he tried to make a statement. And she continued to stay with her husband in spite of the fact that he'd been cheating on her for years and fathered an illegitimate child. I really don't know much about Rosemary McDowell's character, so I can't say for sure if she's the type of woman who would willingly protect her husband if he committed murder. A woman might not shed any tears if her husband's mistress became a murder victim, but would she feel the same way if she believed her husband murdered a 3-year-old boy, even if said boy was his illegitimate child? I guess it's possible Rosemary could have lied and provided Bill with a fake alibi to protect him, but still genuinely believes he's innocent. Or maybe she's 100% telling the truth and Bill was with her all night, but he actually hired someone else to commit the murders for him. I think the key to figuring out what happened is determining Renee and Andrew's whereabouts between the time she left her husband's company headquarters at 5 p.m. and when a burning BMW was found at 10 p.m. We have a train driver who claimed he saw the burning car at 8:50 p.m., but even if that's accurate, that's still nearly 4 hours in which Renee's whereabouts are unaccounted for, which is pretty strange given that the vehicle was found only 12 miles outside of Inverness. So where was she during that 4-hour window? Well, we also have the sightings of the BMW parked at the lay-by near the Mealmore Hotel between 7 and 8 o'clock. If those sightings are accurate, then I think that leans against the idea of Gordon McRae being involved. I just don't see any reason for Renee and Gordon, two people who probably interacted with each other on a daily basis, to meet at a hotel 7 miles out of town. No, this definitely points to her having a secret rendezvous with someone else, namely Bill McDowell. Maybe they were planning to meet there before they made their alleged weekend getaway to Perth, even though Bill has always claimed that he canceled their getaway and never saw Renee that night. Bill also denied that he had any plans to turn the affair into a permanent relationship and move to Shetland with Renee. But the fact that most of Renee's belongings were packed at her house really seemed to indicate that she believed she was moving somewhere. So if Bill actually met Renee and Andrew at that location near the hotel, then he somehow could have lured them to a more isolated lay-by 5 miles away, where he proceeded to kill them, torch the vehicle, and dispose of their bodies. Really, when you look at all the different scenarios, the most logical one points to Bill McDowell being the guilty party. I just find it very telling that Renee decided to take Andrew along on this trip, because why would a woman take a child along with her on a weekend getaway with her lover, especially when she could have left Andrew behind with Gordon? This points to one of two things. Either Renee took Andrew along with her as a means of confronting Bill and threatening to expose the secret about him being Andrew's father unless he left his family and moved in with her, or Bill asked Renee to bring Andrew along with her so he could use this as an opportunity to get rid of them both. I think it's probably the second scenario, because according to Renee's friend Valerie Steventon, Renee wasn't overly enthused about the weekend getaway, since she was busy packing up her house and preparing for the alleged move the following weekend. So this points to the getaway being Bill's idea. Yes, Bill would later claim that he received those coded phone calls which rang a few times and seemed to suggest that Renee was sending him a signal that she was still alive. But we really only have Bill's word that these phone calls actually happened, and I'd say there's no chance Renee was still alive following her disappearance. And here's one more chilling tidbit about him. I wish I had more specific information about this, but according to one article I read, Bill ran into a little legal trouble in 1990 when he was charged with dishonesty and forgery involving sums totaling £240,000. But here's the really interesting part. Apparently, during Bill's career as an accountant, fires broke out at 4 of the firms he worked at, which wound up destroying the financial records. Yes, that's right. 4 fires. Either Bill McDowell is the unluckiest accountant ever, or he's got a habit of starting fires to cover his misdeeds, which is why I find it very telling that Renee's BMW was set on fire to destroy potential evidence. Make of that what you will. When all is said and done, Bill McDowell had the best motive to commit these murders, and when you look at the timeline, he had the best opportunity. That being said, if McDowell was the suspect named in the report submitted to the Crown Office in 2006, then I cannot disagree with their decision not to bring him to court. In spite of all these suspicious things surrounding him, there really is no hard evidence that McDowell committed this crime, or was anywhere near the murder scene that night. We have witnesses who saw a man likely dragging Reaney's body in Andrew's pushchair, but it doesn't sound like they got a good enough look at the man to prove it was McDowell. If they were to take McDowell to trial with the evidence they have now, I just feel there's no way they'd get a conviction. There are too many unanswered questions, such as the validity of his wife's alibi, for me to say with 100% certainty that Bill McDowell's guilty, but he's definitely the best candidate. As far as I know, Bill is still alive and would be in his late 70s now, so if he was the perpetrator, time is running out. I don't think they'll ever be able to build a case against him, or anyone else for that matter, unless Reaney and Andrew's bodies are found. That being said, there is currently a dueling project taking place on the A9, and apparently, sometime in 2017, they might get around to digging up the section of road where Brian McGregor believes the bodies are buried. So if that eccentric old farmer actually turns out to be right, this could be a major development. As gruesome as this may sound, I do kind of hope the remains are buried there, because that would mean there's still a chance this case could get solved. Only time will tell, but I do hope that Reaney and Andrew's loved ones can finally get some closure, because this whole story is a pretty terrible tragedy. So that's about it for this episode. If we're lucky, we might get a resolution in this case sometime next year, but let's not rule anything out yet. So if you have any hard information about the disappearances of Reaney and Andrew McCrae, or if you know for certain where their bodies might be buried, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. I want to thank all my loyal listeners and supporters out there, especially those from the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. A big thank you to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me. And of course, a big shout out to Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website. So if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we would be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week and join me next time for a brand new minisode of The Trail Went Cold. Thank you.